a grim domino effect for car manufacturing in Australia. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. First, it was Mitsubishi, Ford, and a car company called Holden. Now, Toyota says it'll stop making cars in Australia by 2017. The BBC's Phil Mercer joins us from Sydney. Phil, good morning.
Morning to you, David.
Give us a sense of why so many automakers are essentially stopping their production in Australia.
Well, Toyota is blaming high manufacturing costs, and Holden, owned by General Motors, is going. Ford will be on its way. So Toyota really is the last man standing. And when Holden decided to call it a day, it cited a perfect storm of negative influences, including the high strength of the Australian dollar, the high costs of production here, and arguably, the company said, the most competitive and fragmented auto market in the world.
It's an interesting argument, Phil, this idea that the high Australian dollar is such a factor. It is often very difficult to predict currency levels even tomorrow or a month from now. And here's a decision they're looking at over years with the view that the Australian dollar is just going to stay high.
Well, it's ironic that Toyota and the other car makers have been blaming a high Australian dollar just at the time when it's been sinking. It spent much of the past three or so years above the value of its American cousin. But this year, and certainly in the last few months, it's fallen quite dramatically, losing between 10 and 15% of its value. And if it continues to fall, perhaps those arguments might seem far less relevant. And certainly when you look at the reaction, the Prime Minister of Australia, he's very upset that Toyota is leaving the country, and the trade unions say it could spark a recession in this country as well.
The BBC's Phil Mercer in Sydney. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
And there's word that Toyota is halting production, at least temporarily, in Venezuela. The company says government currency controls there have left it without the money it needs to pay for parts. The Venezuelan government is trying to combat runaway inflation with currency controls. Now let's check some other numbers. Barclays Bank today reported that profits are down sharply, yet its stock in London is up 1.4%. The FT100 in London is essentially flat at the moment. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong fell 0.3%. Stock index futures in the U.S. are down this morning. And the tech publication The Verge is reporting that the deadline is today to get your application in to mine the moon. Private companies are applying. NASA won't fund private sector mining operations directly, but could support the logistics. With Treasury Secretary Jack Lew now saying the U.S. could run out of authority to pay its debts in about 2.5 weeks, Republicans controlling the House of Representatives are now talking about a vote on raising the so-called debt ceiling this Wednesday. That's by no means certain. The Treasury Department is shifting money between accounts to keep the country solvent while Congress figures out a strategy. But the fight over the debt ceiling is tied up in a larger problem. The government is not good at making honest and accurate predictions about our future spending and deficits. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains with a little help from a Hollywood time machine.
It's 1987. Paul Newman has just won the Oscar for Best Actor in The Color of Money.
I'm going to beat him, you know.
And Rudy Penner is winding up his fourth year as head of the Congressional Budget Office, wishing he had a magic eight ball. He regrets missing the recessions of 1987 and 1990.
The forecasts for those years were way off.
Then came the 90s and plenty of wealth from characters like the Wolf of Wall Street.
I was making so much money, I didn't know what to do with it.
Uncle Sam's share of Wall Street's riches created a surplus nobody expected. Rudy Penner says it's really hard to make predictions about the economy and budget deficit, and Congress's fuzzy math doesn't make it any easier. Lawmakers budget 10 years out.
A very distinct budget horizon of 10 years does allow you to cheat by pushing costs beyond that budget horizon.
The Roth IRA is a good example of that. Money is taxed as it goes in, so Congress can say, woohoo, look at all this new revenue. but Roth IRA earnings are tax-free, so the government loses out in the end. But Congress cheerfully ignores that. Another trick? Counting spending that we always knew would wind down as savings, like the cost of the Afghan and Iraq wars. Linda Bilmes teaches public policy at Harvard.
So it's not really savings. It's like buying stuff on sale that you never intended to buy and saying, look how much I saved.
It's not logical, but it's how humans have evolved to think. Forget about the past, distort the future, and focus on the present. Stuart Vise is a professor of psychology at Connecticut College.
When we were out in the world foraging for food, we had to take what we could get immediately.
So maybe we should take budgeting out of human hands. After all, computers don't fudge the future. Just ask HAL, the computer in 2001, A Space Odyssey.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
And back in 2001, the Congressional Budget Office was projecting surpluses for years to come. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Luge women's singles at Sochi. I'm not saying a thing. There are apps for digital devices to help you avoid finding out who won at the Olympics before you're ready to watch the time-shifted event on TV. We have put up a handy list at marketplace.org. An app can help, or just use what I call the Shakespeare approach. You know how Macbeth will end even before the play begins, but there can still be serious drama. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.